Okay, good evening, council. It is 6:06 PM, so I'll call this meeting to order. Please take your seats. As always, we will begin with the traditional territory acknowledgement. The University of Alberta and the University of Alberta Students Union occupy Indigenous land in Amiskwichi Waskaikin, or Beaver Hills House, on Treaty 6 territory. From time immemorial, the banks along the river valley have been known as the Pahonin, a meeting place for the Nahiowak, or Cree, the Niitsitapi, or Blackfoot, Métis, Dene Suliné, Ojibwe, Soto, Anishinaabe, Haudenosaunee, and others. The university, the students' union, and much of the city are located on the unlawfully stolen land of the forcibly removed Papas Jay's Cree. We acknowledge that sharing this land gives each of us the responsibility to research the historic contexts of Treaty 6, to reflect on our personal relationships to the land, the nations we've named, and to our roles in upholding justice on this territory. Since they began, the Students Union and the university have benefited from historic and ongoing dispossession of land and resources from Indigenous peoples. As a result, it is our responsibility to seek the restitution of this land and its resources. Finally, we seek to do better by working to make our learning, research, and governance align with the histories, languages, teachings, and cultures of First Nations, Métis, and Inuit peoples in the land presently occupied by the Canadian state. We encourage critical reflection by asking the following question. In relation to the territory on which you are situated, what role do you play in strengthening the resistance and resurgence of Indigenous students within your communities? For today's oath reminder, we just recited it last meeting, so I will simply remind you that it is an oath you have taken and to carry it through in today's meeting and in your roles as members of council. For speakers' business today, just one item, but it's a big one. Our general elections are fast approaching. So members of council who are running in a contested executive or board of governors election are required to take a leave of absence from council and its standing committees. The leave of absence will run from February 24th, the close of nominations, to March 9th, the end of voting. If you have any questions about this, please feel free to reach out to myself or our lovely CRO. And I emphasize it, but I just want to note explicitly, it's only if the race is contested. So you'll just kind of have to wait and see. I would appreciate a heads up if you plan on running. I'll keep it confidential, but it just gives us an idea of our numbers for quorum moving into the election season. Otherwise, that is it for speakers' business, and I'll move into attendance. Abner? Gerline? Christian? Julia? Joanie? Alex?
Here.
Abdul?
Here.
Rebecca? I neglected to announce also that Leo's resignation has taken effect. Milan? Fateh? Thank you. Levi? Oh, sure.
Ours are working.
So while Levi troubleshoots, I'm just going to continue with attendance. We don't really need the microphones for that purpose. Peen. Jaden. Paulina.
Here.
Van Preet. Thank you. Medina. Adrian.
Present.
Lionel. Ibukun. Gabriella.
Here.
Aryan. Daniela. Thank you, Charvi. Simran. Laurel. David. Rana. Vedant. And I am present and Mark is not. You turned mine off, Levi. I was able to turn it back on. It shut off kind of mid speech, I think. Democracy. We do need the speakers for hybrid to work properly. So just take a moment, relax, enjoy the time. Thank you to our tech wizard, Levi. That should still be, or it should be working now.
Test.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Lytle. I don't want my ears to bleed, so let's just move on. Before we move to the consent agenda, I did see that there's a number of late additions. Are there any motions relating to those? To be clear, if there are no motions relating to those, they will not be on the agenda for today. Jaden.
Can we do my presentation?
Yes, so the motion will be to special order. Is it 3C to the order paper? Is there a second for that motion? Aryan? Okay, thank you. So the motion will essentially be of the effect that Jaden's student group committee report on a student group committee investigation will be presented at council today. Would you like to just briefly speak in favor of that?
We're going to go over what the investigation process was. Given the severity of what occurred, we will have to probably go in camera, however. It's generally it. So. For the members who are on student group committee, I think they'd probably agree that it's best to do it in camera.
Okay. So that is in order. Are there any members wishing to speak in opposition to this briefly? Okay, seeing none, we will move right into a vote. The motion is to special order agenda item 3C to the order paper. If you are opposed to this motion, please make it known by a show of hands. Seeing no opposition, the motion passes unanimously and the agenda item is included on the order paper. Are there any other motions relating to the late additions? Milan.
I'll get to the late addition in a second, but first I would like to withdraw item 8C, 8D, and 9A from the agenda. And just let me find the late ads. And I would like to special order item.
Sorry, nine. Just a sec. So you said 8C, 8D, and 9A?
Yeah, I like to withdraw those from the agenda.
Okay.
And I would like to special order 9C onto the order papers.
So just in regards to 8C, 8D, and 9A, these aren't motions that we've gotten to. They relate to the speech that happened in Lethbridge, I believe. Hate speech towards former and current SU councillors and the Alberta Sovereignty Act. Is there any opposition to taking those off the agenda? Those are all discussion items, I believe. Sorry, no, they are not. But is there any opposition to removing those? Lionel, do you have opposition to like a specific one? Okay.
Can I respond to Lionel?
I don't want to get into a debate on this right now. So we'll leave this matter for now and we can deal with it again once we get to those items specifically. But the motion to include the late edition.
Late edition 9C.
9C is in order. Is there a second to that? I see Aryan. Thank you. And this relates to the Minister of Advanced Education's demands to strengthen free speech on campus. That would include this discussion on today's order paper. Would you speak briefly in favor of this motion?
Yeah, of course. So as everyone knows, last week after the protests happened in Lethbridge and after the controversy surrounding Professor Francis Wilson's speech at the University of Lethbridge, who is known for notoriously denying the harms for schools, the Minister of Advanced Education in his statement condemned the cancellation of speech, and he ordered last Friday to universities to please them to draft reports on free speech. So my purpose for bringing this motion is to discuss any action we want to take, as I'm sure this has been impacting everybody. I'm on top of free speech, and I'm sure here everybody agrees, you know, that free speech should not be that hate speech is not an excuse for free speech. So I just want to bring the council to have a discussion on, you know, how we feel about this, and if there's any, if you want like to respond in a certain way to these requests, given the timing of this.
Okay, thank you. Are there any members wishing to speak in opposition to this, to including this on the agenda for today? Okay, seeing none, we will proceed into a vote. Again, the motion is to include late edition 9C to the order paper, which is to discuss the Minister of Advanced Education's announcement, as Milan just explained. If you are opposed to this motion, please make it known by a show of hands. Okay, seeing none, the motion is carried unanimously. Are there any other preliminary business that members would like to bring forward? Aryan?
I don't know if it's already been done, so I apologize, but I think we have to special order 8F as well from the late additions to the current agenda.
Is that to approve the French translation?
Yes.
Okay. If that is a motion someone would like to make, they're welcome to make it. It is not a requirement, however. Okay, seeing no motions, we will move on to the consent agenda. Today's consent agenda includes... Today's consent agenda includes our minutes from last meeting, as well as the appointment of Pedro Almeida to be part of the Chancellor Selection Committee on the Senate. Is there any opposition to the consent agenda as it is presented? Okay, seeing none, the consent agenda is approved as presented. And we will move into presentations. The first of which is the motion to allow the Edmonton Federation of Community Leagues to present to Students' Council. Before we proceed with the presentation, is there any opposition to the presentation? Okay, seeing none, the presentation will proceed. Christian, would you like to briefly introduce it?
Yes, it's working now. Hi, Council. The very first presentation on our list is from the Edmonton Federation of Community Leagues. As I've talked about this in the past, I think that community leagues are a really great pathway for us to get involved in terms of on-the-ground grassroots advocacy. You've all talked about transit safety as an issue. You've talked about community safety as an issue, housing, and even just the buses being on time. And beyond what we do here at the Students' Union, there is another organization in the community that also focuses on these, and these are our community leagues. So in the regions we live in, there is a community league there, but the equivalent of the body that helps oversee these leagues is EFCL, the Edmonton Federation of Community Leagues. And I invited them here to talk to you all about what they do, how you can get involved, and how you can also help spread the word with your constituents and students about how to get involved in their local community league. So I'll pass it over to Juanita from EFCL.
Thanks so much, Christian. Hi, everybody. I'm excited to be here. Can someone just give me screen sharing access? Because we have a presentation and then I can share. Oh, there we go.
Screen sharing privileges, yes.
Yes, showed up. Thank you. Yeah, we'll talk about basically community leagues. We're going to go over what community leagues are, what they do, how to join your community league. So I'm Joanne Cho. I'm the Community Inclusion Advisor at the EFCL. So my role is really to support community leagues and being stronger allies to the neighborhoods that they support and the neighbors they support. I'm also a U of A alumni. And one of the neat things about leagues that we'll talk about is they are nonprofits. There are some leagues that have some connections to certain branches at the University of Alberta. So for example, Community Service Learning is one that comes to mind. They have students that have done placements at leagues. Leagues, because they're a nonprofit, they can be in a place for like the arts work experience, all these other things. The English language school at the U of A too, they often, as one of the requirements for students who are coming here as they're learning English to transition into a degree program at the U of A, part of their experience is like joining their league and getting involved. And so there's a lot of benefits to the league and a lot of, you know, especially for all of you here who are interested in potentially advocacy, civic politics and all this, joining your league might be a nice way to kind of apply those skills in that neighborhood level lens when you end up leaving student council. So, but beyond that, there's so many other great benefits. And so I'm excited to talk to you today. I'm going to go through a couple slides and hopefully, you know, make it as quick as possible. It seems like you have a very full agenda tonight. So thank you again for having us. I thought I would just start and maybe see how many of you have heard of a league at all, or a community league, or if any of you have joined a league. Hearing crickets, this is great. If you haven't heard of a league, every neighborhood has one and we'll talk about it. They're there. It's a 100-year-old movement. So it's quite a ingrained movement in Edmonton. And particularly if you get into city politics, you'll realize a lot of councillors actually come from the community league movement. And it's one that you definitely can tap into as well. So what are some communities you belong to? We kind of have the slide here because often people aren't even sure what their league is, what this means. Community leagues, the beauty of it is it's open to everybody. And it doesn't matter, you know, what your faith background is, what kind of intersectionalities you belong to, as long as you live in the neighborhood, you can be part of your league. One of the challenges students, potentially, particularly post-secondary students, find in joining their league is that they're not homeowners. Often they're renters. And for some students, they're only staying in Edmonton for maybe 4 years or a couple semesters. And so because of that, they find that there's maybe a block to joining their league because they're not staying here long term. And that's not the case at all. Like, in fact, if you're new to Edmonton, the league is kind of the best place to join to actually get immersed in that Edmonton experience and that neighborhood level experience. And because it's open to everybody, I would highly encourage any of you to be able to kind of join your league. And we'll talk a little bit more of what that looks like. In terms of why join your league, there's a lot of research now coming out that being part of those communities creates that sense of belonging, reduce feelings of isolation, safety. Some of you mentioned transit safety, right? That's a big part of it too. There are some leagues that are really taking more of an active approach and having programming around neighbors who are there to kind of greet you as you get off the LRT station, or walking buddies and things like that. So safety increases as you know your neighbors and as your neighbors know you. Boosts social well-being and empowers us to grow. So just a bit about the leagues and what they are. This is kind of a map. It's, I don't know how big it's showing up on your end, but Edmonton has 162 neighborhoods. It's a big city, right? And every neighborhood gets money from the city of Edmonton to form the Community League, which is a nonprofit. It's governed by people who live in the neighborhood. And the real role of that is to provide social recreation and leisure programming for the people who live in that neighborhood. The first league was formed in 1917 in Crestwood community, actually, as a response to city council trying to do some changes in construction and didn't consult the neighborhoods about it. And really, truly, anyone can join the league. In the league board that oversees it, if any of you know anything about nonprofits, the board kind of directs where the money goes and all of that is run, and it's volunteer too, and it's by neighbors. But then you can also volunteer for events, programs, activities within the league. So depending on, you know, your time commitment, how much you want to get involved, and where you see kind of even your career trajectory, there's different avenues for you to get involved in your league. Every neighborhood is different, and it's reflected of the people who live there. And one of the big issues right now in Edmonton, some of you may have known, is the diversification and densification of neighborhoods, especially the older neighborhoods. So, you know, condos, townhouses, row houses, right? More housing allows different walks of life to be in that neighborhood, different socioeconomic status. And that's become a tricky part for some neighborhoods as they're changing quite rapidly, right? And so, you know, if those are the kind of issues that you're interested in and you want to have your voice heard, leagues can be a great way to kind of spearhead that and allow you to have that platform. Just the slide here kind of shows a little bit more, right? So like I said, the board is elected of people who live in the neighborhood. Each neighborhood in Edmonton can form a community league and they receive funding from the city. There's some leagues you might have seen, like, for example, the closest one to the U of A is McKernan Community League. They have McKernan, but Gravia has a league hall, and many of them do have halls that you can then rent out. And as a league member, you often get it at a discounted price. And also some green space that is attached to that league that can be used for things like tennis courts or ice rinks or things like that. The community league movement, it's quite unique to Edmonton, actually. There's no city in the world that has this movement the way Edmonton does. Victoria is the closest. It is modeled after kind of a system in the UK, but we are the only one to have one in every neighborhood. And like I said, they're nonpartisan. They're open to anyone who lives there. They historically, they are also going through this process of reconciliation, inclusion, allyship. But as Edmonton has become more diverse, so have the leagues. And that's kind of been nice to see. We're seeing more diverse programming. And the beauty about a community league too, for us from that student angle, is, you know, if there's a program you see that you want in your neighborhood and you don't have it, here's your chance to kind of advocate for it to be there. The idea of the community league also falls under the city of Edmonton's idea for 15-minute city. So everyone should be able to walk to their league or walk to their league programming or be able to get there by a bike or really just a short commute that doesn't involve a car. And yeah, I'm pretty sure you all kind of know what a neighborhood is, green spaces. I'll kind of just quickly go through what leagues do, because they're a nonprofit and they are giving money from the city. So it's important to know what amenities are there. Just by virtue of living in a neighborhood, whether you pay rent or whether you own your own home, the city is allocating money because you live there in that space to the community league through your property taxes. So take advantage of whatever your league offers. And like I'll talk about later how to find your league. Every league has different programming, but if there's something you want to see happen, this is a chance to kind of advocate for that. So in terms of what they do, the first thing is really bringing neighbors together. They do this through a wide variety of places. Most commonly is barbecues, potlucks. McKernan Belgravia does a lot of this in September, and they really want to build a more rapport with students in particular as well. So does Park Allen. So does some of these ones that neighbor the university. They really want more opportunities to mingle with students because they want the residents to feel part of the university. And most of the residents are alumni of the U of A as well. And so there's probably some correlation there too, right? To be able to get some support. But they have gardening. They do events to bring people together. And from what I've heard from the five leagues that are around the U of A area, they want more, a stronger connections with U of A students because they want students to feel like they're part of the city, embedded in the city. As some of you know, right, the U of A is its own city within the city of Edmonton. That sometimes is how it feels. And so the leagues could be a nice way to kind of branch out and do some of that work in the community. The second thing they do is recreation and programming. No, the U of A does this too, right? And you get discounts for being a U of A student to access U of A recreation and sport programming. But the leagues also offer some great discounted programs as well. They offer everything from pole walking to yoga. So that's kind of a good thing to shelve in the back of your mind once you become an alumni. But you know, they also do other things. So for any of you that live in the Oliver area, the Oliver Community League started a food pantry. And so it's kind of a take something, leave something kind of pantry. So nice for that. Alberta Ave has a food cooking program that's geared for food security. So if there are constituents that you know that are struggling with food security, often check with their local league. There might be some programs they're eligible for. Some leagues are also food bank and weekend food sites that you can go to and then pick up your packages from there. This one on the bottom left was a clothing swap that a league did. So you basically came and you could swap your clothes out, right? So they're doing some really cool things that might be really relevant to students, especially students who are struggling just given inflation and finances right now. And often, obviously, the programming is pretty low cost. I think yoga classes and stuff might be like $15 for a couple, or and often free sometimes too with a league membership. So develop and maintain services. So community leagues are responsible for 57 community gardens in the city. So in the U of A, it really depends. I think McKernan has one and then Park Allen has one. But depending on what neighborhood you live, it could really vary. Boyle Street has one. It's really nice. Some of the gardens are free and anyone can garden in them. Some of them you pay a small amount of money, like in Oliver, and you have a plot of land. So that might be a nice place to point students to if they really want to do gardening, but they live in condos, apartments where they don't have green space. There's 250 playgrounds. So majority of Edmonton's playgrounds are built by community leagues through fundraising, through community efforts, and then given back to the city for liability reasons. So it's kind of a neat thing about our place. Basketball courts, 46 of them. So if you're struggling to find outdoor basketball courts in the summertime, the U of A is booked up. Community leagues have them. Often there's free time where anyone can access, and usually you don't need a membership to access the basketball courts. Water spray parks, there's 55 of them that are made by leagues. So again, a fun thing too. And if you were to rent out like a community league and let's say the green space around it, and often you can get a really good rental deal for it, you often can use the amenities that the league has. Outdoor tennis courts, there's 24 of them. Some of them you do require membership with your local league, but if you have membership, let's say in Park Allen Community League, and you want to use the tennis court in Willoughby, the neighborhood, you will be able to. Just because you have a membership in one league doesn't exclude you from memberships in other league amenities. 119 outdoor skating rinks. So this is kind of cool. I mean, there's one in every neighborhood. And I know there's a lot of U of A students who, especially during COVID, were looking for outdoor ice rinks to be able to skate on, to be able to gather with friends. You can rent those skating rinks too. So I think that's kind of nice if you're ever thinking of some sort of fundraiser activity or like a 3-on-3 hockey game, you can rent those rinks. The rinks themselves are built and maintained by community league volunteers, and the city of Edmonton offers training. So, you know, if you've ever thought you wanted to learn how to make an outdoor ice rink, this could be a nice volunteer gig. And then 126 community halls, and the halls can be booked up for anything from a birthday party to like an election to, like I said, clothing swaps. I've seen markets in there, lots of things. The other big thing they do is advocate for the community. I think this one is maybe the most relevant to Students Union when it comes to maybe trying to get your voices heard to the city. If there's something that you want the city council to recognize, to hear, like transit safety is a big one. I think another one that I've heard from U of A students in recent times has been just transit safety combined with safe and supervised consumption sites and dealing with houselessness in the bus shelters and that safety feeling. Advocating with the league, often city council will go to community leagues first. They went to community leagues first when they were looking to drop the speed limit to 40 kilometers an hour in the residential area. There's a new supervised consumption site that's being planned in White Avenue, and the first town hall was in a community league, and that was open to anyone in the city. So I really strongly suggest if there are issues that are under that Edmonton municipal lens that city council has control over, finding the leagues that are in that neighborhood that's impacted as well, and banding with them to, you know, either present to council or have a town hall in that league, it's going to get city council's attention. And that's what leagues are there for, as a place to kind of support with those advocacy efforts. So that, I think, is probably the most salient one, connection to Student Youth Union. But also, many of you probably have the skills from your time in SU. So if you are continue to have interest in civic politics, joining your league, joining the board, and then bringing those concerns, whether it is things like safety or, you know, transit or roads, or even the programming and or downtime revitalization, things like that, right? There's over 1500 volunteer league board members. So these are people who have, like, sitting on a league board to govern the organization. And we have about over 8,000 Edmontonians who are volunteers in their community league. So it's a big movement for sure. The typical league board, you know, it's kind of typical to any kind of nonprofit where you have, like, your president, secretary, treasurer. Even like US students, you can join your league board. And if you think that that's a little too much, or you're not sure what you're getting into, the EFCL offers a lot of training and support for new board members too. So if you have time on your plate to volunteer and you're interested, we can support you in that as well. So why join your league, right? Get to know your neighbors. That's the big one, right? Know who's in your community. You can see them, they can see you. It's kind of this nice thing of just having that connection. You can save money on recreation. If any of you have the Leisure Access Pass, or like as many of you are students, you'll probably get more of a discount through that. But as you become an alumni and those things are maybe not eligible to you, then the league might be a better movement. Volunteer experience, right? That's a big one for students as well, right? Lots of students through CSL, through arts work experience, through the graduate student internship have like connected with leagues and done some experience there. But there's also students who have just volunteered on hand for things like building an ice rink or supporting a league with their archival project or supporting the board. And that has helped them to get into jobs and careers. You can rent and use the hall. Like I said, the amenities like ice rinks, tennis courts. And the league needs people like you. University students particularly are such an underrepresented group in community leagues, and they need your voice. You see things from a different perspective. You often have more time and energy to be able to dedicate to the things that you care about, and leagues want to know what you care about. Their programming needs to also match your interests. And we've seen in the recent times that not all leagues match the interests of potentially the youth in the neighborhood. And so having your voice heard in whatever capacity that makes sense for you is so important. And then in terms of just like as a, you know, being
sorry
a student.
Sorry to cut you off.
Oh, sorry.
We've reached the end of the 15
minutes. Okay.
So we will need it.
I'll just put this in.
Sorry, here. We can potentially extend. I'll just need council to kind of give its approval.
If you can give me like 2 more minutes, that would be.
Sure. We'll have to do it by 10 just because that's how our rules work. But if you only need 2, you can just use 2. Extend. Okay. Second. So the motion is to extend by 10 minutes. Is there any opposition to that motion? Okay. Seeing none, we are extended by 10 minutes. Please continue.
Thanks so much. Yeah. So that's why you should join. Why you should join your league in terms of just being in that SU role, right? I think to pitch to students that you can like connect people to those natural supports, the volunteering, that advocacy piece, and then of course, local and affordable activities close to home. I just also wanted to, some of you may wonder like, how do I actually join my league or know how to be a member? You can just go to the EFCL.org and then you click the find a league by a membership kind of button at the top, and you'll get to this page, and then you can put in your neighborhood or your postal code and your league will pop up. Some leagues like Oliver, for example, the membership is free. And if it's free, I highly recommend just sign up for it. You'll get information about your community, what's happening. It's never a bad thing. Some of them offer, they require a fee, and that fee is between like $10 to $25, sometimes $35. But I would just say email the league and let them know that you're a student, and often they'll give you a discount or they'll give it to you for free. Or you can always contact the EFCL as well, or you can find our contact info on the website, and I'll maybe even just put it in the chat for you all. At league support. At And we can help you too to get a discount, because I do know as students, right, money is kind of tight. This is kind of also our information just as the EFCL. Our role, like Christina had mentioned, is really to support leagues, to advance that community league movement, and to support Edmontonians in getting connected to the league. And so if you're interested in getting involved with the league, if you want to work with the league on a project, if Students Union is like saying, hey, we want to deal with transit security and safety, and we don't know which leagues to contact and how to get involved, that's our job, is to connect you to those leagues that then can support you in having your voice heard at council or advocating for what you need. And then the environment to support students. So that's all I had to share tonight. Thank you so much for having me here. I put her email in the chat, and then you can also see her stuff here if you need to get a hold of us. Okay.
Thank you.
And I can just, I think, leave the meeting. Hey, yes. Yeah. Well, thanks everyone. Have a great evening.
Is there any questions first?
Any questions for Juanita? Milan?
Yeah, so first of all, thank you for the presentation. That was very, I personally learned a lot, you know, about how communities work. And I just want a question, because I want to get your thoughts on this, because I'm really curious about how do you see like the 15 minute, how do you see like the 15 minute cities I'm plan for the city of Edmonton, and like the whole rezoning effort coming into the Edmonton neighborhoods? Potentially, you know, impacting the work that that community leagues are currently doing right now.
Yeah, the 15-minute city plan that was kind of framed under Don Iveson's kind of city council really had leagues at the center. So the plan was actually to, especially the leagues with halls, to kind of renovate those spaces to offer things like a coffee shop in the hall and to offer more workspaces so that people could come and gather in the community league for meetings if they're working from home. It was supposed to be more vital. This is going to cost a lot of money, and so it's just going to take time. This is city council's plan, though, right, is to have people accessing things closer to home, understanding that right now Edmonton is quite a car-based city. I would say if you live near campus, you can walk to a lot of amenities, but as you start to get further out, it can be challenging. The 15-minute city too, if any of you live more in the outskirts of Edmonton, so like the far west, south, north, east, you'll kind of know it's very, there's not much to walk to because of the way the suburbs are located. So that's where the league building itself will become more vital. And this of course involves council funding down the road, but it is a good idea, because ultimately, as all of you know, right, gas is expensive, driving is expensive. If you can go to yoga class for $8 a class and walk there for 10 minutes, that's super nice. And as a student, if I can meet people that are in my neighborhood, especially, I think the league movement is especially important for those U of A students who are living at home or not living on campus, right? They may be domestic students who went to high school in Edmonton and live in a different neighborhood. There's already a degree of isolation because they're not living on campus. They're not as embedded. And then, you know, if they don't know their neighbors and everything, that further complicates that isolation, right? So that's where that 15-minute city piece could be important. In terms of implementing it, I mean, council would like it to be, you know, kind of in the next 10 years, and what we'll have to see, right? Budget is really the big construct or the confining factor right now. But great question.
Paulina, please go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much for giving this presentation. I love community leagues. Like, they have a special place in my heart. And I just wanted to share a funny story. I hope that's okay. But last year, my sister saw this like sign for like free hot dogs community league. And so we attended another community league's hot dog night, but like we weren't part of the community league or anything. And I didn't realize I was speaking to the president. But he asked me what part of the neighborhood I live in. And I looked him in the face and said, I can't tell you that because stranger danger. And then I left with my hot dog. It was a wonderful experience. Thank you.
Yeah. And to that point, right, I think as students, if you see something in a league and you want to attend, for the most part, unless it's like board meetings, you don't need membership. The league is a bit of a strange thing, to your point, right? Because these are your neighbors. So there is this bit of privacy that kind of goes out the window because they know where you live. But that also, I think, for example, like with Parkdale, Cromdale, that's a league where they have a transit safety program. And so what it has allowed them to do is like near the LRT stations, they actually say hi to their league members as they get on and off after 10 p.m. It's between like 10 to p.m. to I think 11:30 p.m. And so that's really nice. I've heard from students, they really appreciate that when they're studying late and they have to go home and there's there's someone there that just sees them, right? But yeah, to that point, Community League Day is often the third Saturday in September, and there's a lot of free events, a lot of free food, a lot of barbecues throughout the city. So, and they, there's just too big for them to check membership. So I recommend, you know, you all go. It's on the EFCL page. So if you're looking for free food on a Saturday as students, or I think last year, the year before, One League actually was giving free hot air balloon rides. So you never know what's happening.
Okay. And I think our last question or comment from Jaden, please go ahead.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. I think the community leagues are pretty cool. One thing, though, I think the potentially the student union could help with is actually just informing students that they exist. I personally only learned that they existed like 3 months ago, and I'm sure I'm not the only one who probably like doesn't know a lot about them or just recently discovered that or just now discovered them. So I think it could be very useful to just inform students, as I know I actually like just sent an email to my community league to get a cheaper membership for being a student. So we'll see how that goes. But I'm sure there's a lot of other students who would be interested in like, you know, joining leagues just for like the programs and whatnot they offer. So perhaps that can be something the SU advertises.
Yeah, thanks so much. I think we'll follow up with you, Kristen. Maybe there's a way, or maybe there's a way in orientation or something for us to just give the quick kind of rundown of what leagues are and bring some swag or something like that. But yeah, I do hear this from a lot of students, and often leagues have not really advertised to them in the past because they're not homeowners, but you don't need to be a homeowner to be part of your league, and there's so much benefits. And so now that leagues have gotten out of that mindset, I'm hoping and full that students will hear more about it, and through all of you too, right? Talk to your classmates and constituents. Yeah.
Okay, so that brings us to the end of the presentation. Thank you so much, Juanita, for coming. And
thanks, everyone.
I believe there's contact info on the slide if any members want to reach out.
Yeah,
and in our group chat too.
Before I go, I'll just maybe put a link. That's a Google, it's a document, but then it gives you more information about leagues. You can share it with others in our info too. So that will work. Double check that it's just that blue kind of sheet that I was going over, and you should all be able to see that. Yes, cool. Thank you all. Have a great evening. Have a great meeting as well.
Thanks. Have a good evening. Bye. Okay, so Courtney's putting that link in the group chat as well. And with that, we'll move to our next presentation, which is to allow Asil Atia, I think I'm getting that right, to present on GOTV. Before we proceed, is there any opposition to this motion? Hey, seeing none, Christian, would you like to briefly introduce?
Yes, I have Asil Atia here, our Get Out the Vote coordinator, to come talk to you all about what we're planning on doing for this year's GOTV campaign. So I won't take long, and I'll hand it over to Asil.
Are there slides that you'd like to put up? Okay. Courtney, do you have your email? It'll just be a moment. Make sure to admit.
everyone. Welcome to me. I'm talking about the Get Out the Vote campaign. I'm really excited to talk about this today. I'll introduce myself. So my name is Cecilia Tia. My pronouns are she, her. I am a fifth year poli-sci student and SOS minor student. Just a little bit about me before we get started is that I am a cat mother.
Sorry, if someone's on a Zoom call and you have your mic on, please move, mute yourself. Okay, let's try that. Yeah, that sounds okay. Please continue.
Okay, I'll reintroduce myself. Yeah, so my name is Cecilia Tia. I'm a fifth year poli-sci student and a SOS minor student. A fun fact about me, just a little bit, I'm a devout cat mother and a chronic TikTok dance learner. If you guys need any questions on how to do a TikTok dance, probably have an answer to it. So what is Get Out the Vote? Yeah, so Get Out the Vote is a campaign run by the UASU, and it's in partnership with student unions and associations across Alberta. A big point is that we are nonpartisan. So we are not telling anyone who to vote for, and we're not aligned with any political party. Essentially, our mission is just to decrease voter apathy across campus and encourage civic participation and engagement for the upcoming provincial elections. So why does GOTV matter? Just the next slide. So why does GOTV matter? It's important to note that students are a distinct group with distinct challenges. Students face a unique challenge to voting. Essentially, where is their ordinary place of residence? Where are they able to vote? So students may face different mobility challenges. Where can a student find a time to vote? It's an issue shared with this busy demographic, but it's specifically unique to students and schedules that are have a plethora of different issues like midterms, extracurriculars, being on campus for late hours. The average student will live with the longer term impacts of government decisions for more of their lives. Yeah. Go to the next slide. So what do we want to do as GOTV? We want to remind students for the upcoming provincial elections. We're going to do this through a large pledging campaign. So you want to remind them that a provincial election is coming and that they should vote. And we also aim to provide students with the resources on how to vote, when to vote, and where to vote. And also advanced polling will be hosted on May 25th and 26th at SUB in order to make voting more accessible for students. So how are we doing this? Yeah, so we're going to do one-on-ones, tabling, classroom talks. These are all really volunteer-based. Thankfully, we have like over 40 interested volunteers that are really eager to get started with us. We're also going to do this through mass marketing. So making pledging attractive to those that might not have the drive or the vigor to vote. So this is through giveaways where we're where those who pledge to vote are entered into a draw to win grocery vouchers, swoop plane tickets, laptops, UASU, stuff packs, and a lot more. We're also doing a pledging competition between faculties. So the faculty that gets the most pledges, percentage-wise, will essentially win a prize. So how can you help? So basically by sharing our information. So through social media, through our website, just in person and conversations that you have with your friends and families, that's a huge help and a huge way to get voting pledges. Also volunteering your time. So if anyone's free to do a classroom talk or to canvas or table on any of your free time, that would be awesome and be a really huge help in reaching our pledging goal. So also if you have any desire to help with us, you can contact me at sl.tia@sul.ualberta.ca. Also, all of our information and so much information about the upcoming provincial elections, why it's important to vote, why we want students to vote, how they can help, how they can vote, is on the licensetocomplain.ca website along with the pledging form. And the next slide is just basically if anyone has any questions, questions, suggestions, concerns.
Hey, thank you, Asil. Are there any questions, comments, suggestions, feedback from council? Julia,
Yeah, thank you so much for your presentation, Seal. I just wanted to ask an update on how many volunteers you folks have now.
Yeah, so 50 volunteers asked to volunteer, but we actually have like 45 or like around 45, 40 confirmed. Yeah, thank you.
I saw your hand go up as well, Joni.
Thank you, Seal, for the presentation. Mm-hmm. Also love to hear that we already have like 40 volunteers. That's like really big. So my question for you is, how do you plan on making sure that Augustana and CSJ students are involved throughout this entire process?
Yeah, thanks, Joni. That's a big thing that we're dealing with right now, is that we want to connect with them. So we want to have a direct line of communication. That's something that we're looking at right now. We want to have classroom talks on their campuses. We want to have tabling at our campuses. That's a conversation that we're planning to have with them.
Any other comments, questions, feedback? Fotang, please go ahead. Okay, I think that brings us to the end of the presentation. So thank you very much, Asil, for coming in and presenting to us. Okay, before we move on to the next presentation, I do just need to make a reminder. It was raised to me that presentation slides had not been submitted to the JOT form by the order paper deadline. There's nothing we can do about it now, but I just want to give a heads up that in the future, if the slides aren't submitted by the Friday deadline, I will not be allowing them to be used during the presentation. So just make sure you get those slides in on time. If you have any questions about that rule or procedure, please feel free to reach out to myself. So with that, we will move to our final presentation, which is the presentation from Jaden regarding Alpha Psi Levi.
I was, I guess, just going to make a suggestion, since it was suggested that this is better off in camera because of the subject matter, rather than ejecting our guests and inviting them back in later, maybe just shuffling this down to closed session near the end.
Yeah, I had a similar thought. I just wasn't sure, like, on the kind of urgent nature, and I wasn't sure if we'd get to closed session today. So Jaden, would you, I guess, be open to having this happen at the end of the meeting? That way, just like our guests don't have to leave and come back. Okay. We don't need to spend a lot of time on this. Is there any opposition to that, just moving this motion to the end of the meeting, to our closed session portion? Okay, seeing none, we will move that there. So with that, we will move into executive committee reports. Joanie, please go ahead.
Okay, I'm really gonna try to make this 2 minutes. Happy Black History Month, folks. Just wanted to put that out there. Very happy that, yes, yes. Okay, for Black History Month, I've had the honor of working with our marketing comms team to spotlight 8 individuals on campus who represent Black excellence. I'm very happy to say that Ibuku, one of our counselors, is one of the students who will be spotlighted. We are making sure that we have representation from sort of like all different fields on campus, as well as all of our campuses. So Augustana North and Campus Saint-Jean students will be sort of like on our USU pages. So go like them and give them a shout out. I've also been working with Christian and the Dean of Students Office on a Black History Month event. We're calling it Where is the Love? And which is a conversation on racial trauma and its impact, which will be happening on February 28th from 5 to 7 p.m. So registration will be up, I think, by the end of this week. So you folks can share that out. You folks should also have received, everyone should have received an email from Leger, no opinion in your email accounts. So please make sure you read that email and make sure you can fill it out. It's for the climate survey working group that we've been working with the government of Alberta and the university to make sure that we can conduct a survey on the Alberta post-secondary gender-based violence experience. So it's voluntary. You don't have to do it, but I encourage you folks to do it. And also all the information that will be collected is anonymous. The next thing is next week, World Social Justice Day will be happening. I've had the pleasure of working on this as co-chair with Wellness Supports under the Dean of Students. It'll be happening in Rutherford Library from 14th to 16th. And then on the 16th, we'll also have two sessions happening at Campus Saint-Jean. You can go and register with the link that is found in my report. And lastly, updates in regards to the Days of Significance. So I've been working with the university to create a more interfaith inclusive sort of calendar. And they've recently relaunched their Days of Significance page on their website. So you folks can go check that out. We're going to now continue to make sure we do an extensive consultation with different stakeholders on campus to make sure that all the different faith days that we do have in there are representative of our student body and U of A community, but we are continuing doing that work. So I think that's all. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Julia, please go ahead.
Yeah, hey, Council. I had a plethora of different committee meetings for the past 2 weeks. So I can start with the Legacy Fund committee allocations meeting. Joanie, Abner, Simon, and I. You good? We're able to get a further glimpse into the initiatives and the work our Golden Bears and Panda Sports teams are doing. So very excited for that. Our committee has met for the first time this semester last week, and we had discussions as to the future plans of choosing student art to be put in sub by April, and also integrating putting up Indigenous art in tandem with our sub-renaming committee's work. I've also taken over the Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Steering Committee. It's basically our internal focused committee dedicating to enhancing and expanding the EDI practices of our organization internally. And sort of been working on how I can take over that committee and chair it for the remainder of my term. Joanie and I have finalized our student at large. We'll be sitting on the Health and Dental Plan Committee, and it is on the agenda for today, and we're looking for two counselors to sit on it. So please, if you're interested in the Health and Dental Plan at all and want to see some changes for next year, please let us know and we'll nominate you. I've also been going over sub planning committee. We're able to meet for the first time, reach quorum. It's been a struggle. So it's also one of the items we put on the agenda, and this committee does a lot of important work and ultimately determines the future of sub. So if you're interested in being part of this committee, also please let me know and I'll definitely nominate you. Other than that, my final update is you all should have probably seen by now, but we are going to have, we're limiting access to sub via one card only between 10 p.m. and 6:30 a.m. And that started last Friday. So please make sure you bring your one card when I get back into the building. Thanks.
Thank you. Christian, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a bit of a shorter report, Council, as I took a bit of a small vacation last week. But the big news that I have to report was that a couple weeks ago, I was down in Ottawa alongside CASA, Universities Canada, and the Canadian Chamber of Commerce to launch our campaign on addressing Canada's talent shortage. So there I spoke to the need to eliminate barriers that international students face, spoke about promoting and creating more work integrated learning opportunities throughout the country, and most importantly, ensuring that our research and development infrastructure is well-funded and well-supported. I know many of you in this room are thinking about grad school right now or thinking about going to grad school. So it's important that you can afford that and not as well when you're done finishing your undergrad degree. So it's important that we're making sure the federal government is putting a lot of the funding there, as cost of living is a serious issue, but also making sure that Canada doesn't fall behind when it comes to that when it comes to the topic of research and development. So that's great. And Joanie already talked about the work we've been doing on Black History Month. So again, happy Black History Month. And I'm trying to remember if there's anything, because I've the second week in a row, I have a bit more time left, but nothing comes to mind. On a personal note though, the village from which my ancestors came from just built a new state-of-the-art hospital in Cameroon. So I'm very hyped about the fact there's good healthcare in a rural country. So hyped for that.
Thank you. Abner? Sorry, Girlene.
Hi, Council. So I had the first meeting of Student Library Advisory Committee, which was really great, discussing all the different services that the libraries provide and listening to students' feedback, what they think about libraries and how the services can be improved. One thing that I found really interesting, and I want to flag it for you if you don't already know, is that whenever you need a book which is not available at UL Alberta Library, you can actually put a request and the libraries buy it for you, and they try to get the like digital version, so more than like more and more students can access it. Another thing for ZTC, we received the latest numbers for this term, and I'm happy that the numbers look really good, with more than 1,100 unique courses being registered and more than 800 professors registering. And it's more than any term since the ZTC started. So it's expanding, which is really good. Then I met with the Digital Initiatives Project's librarian, and I will be meeting with the registrar's office and the subject librarians to talk, like discuss the next steps. And then I had the meeting of Student Services Service Management Committee, where we discussed the services catalog and the ways of making it more accessible and enhance it with more and more information. And student feedback really matters on that committee, and they actually have one student at large position available. So if you are interested, or you know somebody who would be interested to be the part of those discussions, please let me know and I can put your name forward. The committee meets once a month, and the next meeting is on 24th Feb. So please do let me know. Lastly, as the part of experiential learning better practices, me and President Montero have been working on compiling the list of resources which can help students while they are into a co-op or internship. Other than that, everything is in my report, and let me know if you have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Abner, please go ahead.
Hello, Council. I hope all of you are doing well. A lot of really great work being done over the past 2 weeks. I hope you all had a chance to review my report. If not, I'm just going to cover a couple of highlights, one of which isn't in my report. The first one is around the Student Experience Action Plan. As all of you know, myself and Sarah Walgamith were here at Council a couple of weeks ago, giving a presentation to all of you, collecting your feedback. Since the start of this, when we started doing the student consultations in the first phase, we've been getting a plethora of feedback from students across campus, thousands of responses of qualitative feedback that the group has been working together to gather that information and have been distilling it down. We had a workshop on Monday where we worked on trying to develop the value proposition for what the unique student experience is at the U of A. And we had different representatives across campus. We love to see more students, and we're going to be entering the second phase of consultation, where they're going to be taking that information that we've collected, breaking it down to something more specific, and sharing it back out with the student body again. So my goal is to make sure that that information is out as early as possible for all of you, that it's in all of our newsletters so that you can sign up for those sessions and be there to provide information. And then the second thing I'll mention is, I know that we've had a lot of conversations around tuition since the fall semester, but there have been questions about what we're going to be doing around direct action. So I just wanted to let you all know, our team has talked about it, and we've decided that we are going to be organizing direct action for the Board of Governors meeting on March 24th. You can all expect to get some more information, as we're still in the phases of planning and organizing what exactly needs to happen. But I think it's going to be a great opportunity for students to be able to come out and voice their concerns directly to the Board of Governors around tuition increases. I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you. So with that, we will move into our next item of business, which is board and committee reports. May we please have the report of the audit committee?
Yeah, so we have a few things that we've been working on recently. So the first one being obviously still processing all the audits, making sure that everyone submitted it and that they are all hopefully going to be approved by the end of this week. Other than that, I've been working with our SRA specialist, Annie, to create an entirely new process for audits to be submitted to allow for greater institutional knowledge to be transferred between VPFs in organizations and also in audit teams. So I'm excited about that. And we're also going to be working to troubleshoot this and get feedback from VPFs as well before we run it kind of in the next audit cycle. Beyond that, I'm also meeting with KPMG later this week to discuss some of the items that everyone has been raising in these conversations. And then, yeah, that's pretty much everything. But if anyone has any questions about any of those things or wants to ask questions about audit, you can message me in WhatsApp. Thank you.
Thank you. May we please have the report of the bylaw committee?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Bylaw did not meet last week. We had a reprieve from our biweekly meetings. However, that will not jeopardize the legislative agenda for the remainder of our term.
Thank you. May we please have the reports of CAC.
Hello, hello. So not too much that's super important to bring here today. The big things are you will be seeing a forum from Christian fairly shortly about date preferences and activity preferences for our informal Augustana meetup. So you'll see more details there. We're planning on going on a Saturday in March to do a few things down there, notably hopefully meeting with the ASA, going on a campus tour, and we're hoping to include some sort of social activity of some variety as well. So please fill out the form when you have a sec. We are also continuing our work on standing orders, both committee and council. And we are still looking for one more person to join the social media subcommittee. It's very low commitment. It's about one week meeting a month, but you would really be helping Milan and his committee out with meeting quorum. So if you're interested, we'll hold a nomination at our next meeting of CAC. I will also note that there is a vacancy for a permanent member of CAC that will be coming up to next council. So start thinking about that if you're interested. Obviously, we're running out of time, so it'll only be a two-ish month position, but I would still highly recommend it to get involved in some of the work that we do. And that is all for me.
Thank you. May we please have the executive committee report?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. So a few different things. I've already mentioned the direct action. That's something we've been discussing in the executive committee. Also, the new safety measures that are going to be, that have just been enacted in sub or on one cards. Budget principles have been a big conversation that I know has been passing around different committees and council. And then finally, we've also been discussing a trip to Augustana. The executives this Friday are going to be visiting Augustana, chatting with the ASA, potentially other meetings as well. At the pleasure of the ASA, if they'd like us to have conversations with anyone else there. So if you've heard anything from Augustana or if there's anything specific you'd like to flag for us before we leave, please just send me a message and let me know.
Thank you. May we please have the Finance Committee report?
Yeah, hi, Council. President Montero mentioned, we've been going over budget principles for the past month now, and they are on the agenda today, mainly by bringing it forward on behalf of the Finance Committee to get all of your feedback on the proposed changes that we have. We are working also on DFU reports, making our way through our last two of them. We're just running into some hiccups on there, so hopefully they'll be resolved soon. We finally officially finished consultation for a fee governance policy changes yesterday, and hopefully the first principles will be brought by the next meeting council, crossing my fingers. And we also had a report from the with John, Director of Department of Research and Advocacy. But yeah, that's it for Finance Committee.
Thank you. May we please have the nominating committee reports?
There isn't really that much, just working to fill SAL positions, and then hopefully on future agendas, there should be some more positions filled for sustainability.
Thank you. May we please have the policy committee reports?
Policy committee approved Indigenous students policy to be referred to council, so we'll be going over that today. And we went over resident policy and transit, public transit, transportation policy, I believe. Yeah, that's good.
Thank you. May we please have the report of the Board of Governors representative?
Yeah, I don't have too much to report on this week. I guess my report to council, I'd say that I went to GFC last week. I was there for the discussions. I was happy to see Gerline talk about soon issues about spot surveys. And I guess going forward, I guess a request I would have from Students Council is that if any of you want me to come speak in front of your various specific faculty departments or anyone you specifically want me to speak with in regards to the strategic plan currently under development or in regards to the Student Experience Action Plan, I'd be more than pleased to do so. So if any of you want to reach out to me or want me to get in touch with anyone specific in your faculty, please do so. But other than that, I've been kind of going around campus, chatting with various students and trying to solicit their feedback so I can be more informed for when we have those discussions at the board table and so I can include them in different submissions in regards to those plans. So that's all for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have a report from ARC today?
ARC hasn't met in the past 2 weeks, unfortunately.
Thank you. Is there a report from SCFC?
That is also me. We're currently in the progress of adjudicating refund applications, and our next meeting is tomorrow. That's all I can really say about it. Thanks.
Thank you. May we please have the student group committee reports? Nothing? Okay. Just for the record, there is no report. Sustainability committee, do we have a report from that committee?
He's gone, so I can do it. Nothing much. We're just in the consultation phase. We have a meeting on Monday to see if we've gotten any responses back. And then the hope is to have that done by all the consultation done by the end of February so that we can make the changes that need to be made and then present it to council.
Thank you. And finally, translation committee.
Not that much to update. We're, still translating some stuff, but we have been talking about hiring a new translator, but nothing concrete yet, so I'll keep you guys updated. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. And with that, we will move to our next item of business, which is open forum. Are there any guests of council that wish to ask questions or make comments? I see Haroon. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Abner, it's great to hear that you're planning direct action. So my question specifically is, I'm reading a recent Gateway article. It's clear that you think that the university has done somewhat of a good job on consultation. So what are you protesting then? If you're not protesting the consultation, are you protesting the tuition? Are you protesting generally affordability?
Yeah. Thank you for the question, Haroon. When I think about consultation, I see consultation as the process of making sure there's conversations being had with elected student leaders and the people that are involved or are going to be impacted by the decision. Implementing what was consulted on is a different story. And from while the university, I believe, has done a good job with consultation, a process that was discussed with student leaders, a process that was brought to Students' Council, and everyone here had a chance to review it and provide feedback. Everyone was in agreement that it was a good process to follow along to make sure that students were appropriately consulted. Following that process, we've now reviewed what the proposals look like as they're going through the governance cycle. And while we provided a ton of feedback around how these are going to negatively impact students, just seeing that the installment fee is going to be removed doesn't seem to be enough with how big these increases are and how students are going to be impacted. So there is still a lot to be able to protest against or do direct action against to ensure that student voices are heard and how these are going to impact them.
Thank you. We will come back to you, Haroon. Mateen, please go ahead.
Just a question to one of you guys. Are there any direct cooperations between the Students' Union and the government of Alberta when it comes to the tuition increases? Any conversations going on? Thank you. So late last year, we had a meeting with the Ministry of Advanced Education, and we did share our frustration with just, again, why there has to be another set of increases. It's a weird position because when the 7% increases were happening, we were pushing for a cap at CPI in the hope that it would bring predictability. It just so happens that CPI is also now high, so we have been pushing for something more predictable, whether it's a rolling average or not approving the proposals at all, or either that or some cap that is lower than CPI. So we provided the minister with our research and findings about things that could be done, whether that is that rolling average suggestion and looking into other proposals with international tuition as well, because we did see some issues in terms of how the university charges tuition for international students. So these were the conversations we had. We hope to hear something soon from the minister, especially as the budget is approaching. But in that meeting, we did stress the fact that we're not happy with this. Affordability is a top of mind for students. So another 5.5% increase on top of a 21% increase over the last 3 years is just not good enough for students. And so the best thing they can do right now is more scholarships and more aid and no tuition increases. So, yeah.
Thank you. Haroon, please go ahead.
Yeah, So I just want to make a quick statement then. So Abner, I agree that the university clearly has not done enough on this, on when it comes to tuition. My only concern here is that, like, when you make comments, especially saying that the university, when you criticize the University of Calgary for their consultation intake, that the University of Alberta has that completely opposite and that they've done a good job on consultation, it reminds me of a time when we were what's called at GFC Academic Planning Committee. And when Stephen Dew was trying to push tuition increases, and he said that it's called the Students' Union and Stephen have different opinions on consultation. Consultation that where it no changes are provided, and they just sit there and they listen. Yeah, well, I totally agree that affordability is an issue, but this is not going to change. Is not really consultation. It's just fulfilling. It's just checking a box on the list. And so what my concern is, and that what my worry here is that it lessens advocacy efforts of other student leaders across campus, apart from the Students' Union, that are trying to push a needle when it comes to tuition increases, when you're making these type of commentary, because you're basically giving the university a point to be like, well, according to Abner, we did a wonderful job on this. And coming back to it, it becomes difficult for other student leaders to push back on this narrative, considering that you're considered a leader for students on this campus. So more or less, I'll give you an opportunity to respond after I'll use another point. But yeah, that's just more so my concern.
Okay, thank you. Lily, please go ahead.
Yeah, this is just kind of a general question for either of you. But I was at the GFC meeting on the 23rd, I think, and Dr. Verna, you kind of made it clear that they have to present a balanced budget and the tuition increases are going to stay the way they are. So I was just kind of going to ask about your guys' efforts. Are they going to be still leaning towards trying to change the tuition increases or more towards trying to make the impact of the tuition increases easier on students, if that makes sense?
Yeah, well, so to your question, I mean, I think we've been trying to do both. I don't think it necessarily needs to be an all or none thing. There is the opportunity throughout 4 months of consultation when there weren't any proposals yet, for us to focus on how we can ensure that we get the most out of these proposals for students to save them money. But that doesn't necessarily mean that because we're trying to save students money in these proposals, that we're supportive of these proposals and the fact that tuition is going up in the first place. So we're going to be going back and having this conversation as we're in the planning process of understanding that we want to save students as much money as possible. We've managed to do that already to some extent with saving the installment fee, but there's still a lot more to be saved if not all of it, if there's no increase at all.
Thank you. Sorry, I just wanted to clarify. So open forum is reserved for guests of council. Question period, which comes next, is the opportunity for members. Are there any other, Haroon, please go ahead.
Yeah, as I promised, I wanted to give Abner, if he wanted a chance to respond. So I'll just like ask him for his thoughts on my comments, if he wants to.
You're welcome to, if you'd like.
I mean, yeah. Okay. So, I mean, what I can say is, we have different opinions of consultation. We have throughout this process, whether it's us, whether it's the International Student Association, groups on campus who've been consulted, have said that we've appreciated the effort that the university has done around consultation with tuition. The biggest thing for me is, I'm staying true to that. I don't want to be lying to students and saying the university hasn't done any consultation, because as elected student leaders, it's our responsibility to represent the views of students, particularly on tuition. So, we've all had as elected leaders the opportunity to view that schedule, to say that we're happy with this consultation process. At the stage that we were doing that, no one expressed to me that they had any issues with the consultation process and the way it was laid out. So from that, I took and gathered that student leaders are in agreement that we're supportive of this. I've stayed true to the fact that we've said that we were happy with this consultation process, and we're focused now on the fact that whatever we've stated throughout that process hasn't been implemented in these proposals, and it's what we're pushing back against. And in speaking to the Board of Governors and doing direct action, there is very rarely the opportunity where students get to come to the Board of Governors and be present and have board members look at them and students look at the board while they're voting on a tuition increase. And this is one of those unique opportunities where we want to make sure that happens.
Hey, last call for questions or comments from guests of council. Hey, seeing none, we will move to open forum. If there are any members of council who wish to make comments or ask questions, please raise your hand. Aryan, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to make a comment. Taking into account Harun's comments today, councillors' comments from last committee session on direct action and the executive's decision to for direct action, I'd like to make a statement. The international tuition increases, they're going to impact a lot of students. I've made this point before. I just wanted to reiterate. The fee increase is going to be like highly impactful because in my example, now I'm currently in open studies and I want to transfer next year. I have a tuition guarantee from last year, but that guarantee is going to change as soon as I transfer. And so when I transfer, they're probably going to boost my fees by like 3-4K per year. And that now, while I have proven to the government that I could afford to, I could facilitate the funds for tuition for my 4 years in my initial plan, we have to account again. This was from a discussion I had with Melissa Padfield when the ISA held a tuition consultation, where it's a niche case, but it's still something to consider. And that's just one of the cases where the impact of tuition increases can affect students is when they have that uncertainty where they want to transfer programs. On top of that, while, like, we have to give the university credit, they have done us a favor by allowing us to consult, by having a consultation with us, that by having consultation on the matter of tuition increases, right? And compared to U Calgary, where they didn't have one. But at the same time, we have to consider that the university might as well be writing these points somewhere. The question is the university, and this isn't like a question, it's a general rhetorical question, is the university actually listening to those points raised? Is the university actually going to factor those things in if they're going to raise it 5.5, 6.5 anyway and say, oh, we took your consultations into consideration. We took the consultation into consideration, but we're going to increase the fees anyway. It just feels like everything happened in vain. As much as I'd like to say, like, you know, we tried our best and everything, it just feels like it wasn't enough because that tuition increase is still going to happen. It's still going to impact international students. And even though we had that period of consultation, they didn't want to, they didn't really take, it feels to me that, oh, they didn't actually care. They didn't account for anything raised in those consultations.
Thank you. Just since we have new members joining us, I just want to reiterate, you have 2 minutes for comments. You hit that perfectly, actually. I don't know if that was intentional, but good job. Next up is Lionel, please go ahead.
Yes, so since people have been talking about like direct action and tuition, like that's my concern that has been talked about. I'm gonna talk about something else. I would like to have a question if any of the executive could answer me. It's rather about like a current world event right now, because we all know that there was a terrible earthquake that happened in Turkey and Syria that thousands of lives might have been perished. And I believe that we do have students, international students from those areas on campus. Could the student union executives, like any of you, say make a commitment that if any students from the region requires help, requires assistance, that the student union stands with them because of this like devastating natural disaster? Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, I'm happy to answer that. And Lionel, thank you for raising it. Yes, if any of these students need support, they can come to us. We're happy to connect them with any kind of financial supports that they need. If there's any that they do need, if there's any kind of social supports from the impacts of what's been happening, we're happy to connect them with UASU Cares or any services either the Students' Union offers or that the university offers to make sure that they have everything they need to get through this period.
You, Abner, please go ahead.
Yes, so I wanted to just make one comment on what Arianet said about the international tuition increases. I appreciate the comments and I can understand where you're coming from with so much consultation being done and feeling like sometimes none of these things have an impact. We're sharing all of these concerns. In this case, I can't speak so much to this period as we're still in the process, but what I can say, Ariane, is last year in May, international tuition increases came forward at the Board of Governors when we first started our roles. And two of the things actually that we were the most adamant about pushing for through those increases was food insecurity across campus and the fact that there's not adequate mental health support. Since that period of time, myself and Joanie have been able to work with the university because we initially raised those concerns with the Board of Governors and with the university. Since that period of time, we've been able to connect the university to work directly with the campus food bank to ensure that they have the support they need around initiatives that they hope to do across campus. And I don't know if you heard this, but the university just recently announced a couple of weeks ago in COSA that they're going to be investing $1.6 million to mental health supports and counseling and clinical services on campus. You know, as a result of what they've heard from us over the past 8 months through our consultation, and it's not coming out of students' pockets. It's coming from operating dollars, from other money that the university is not collecting from students currently. So we're happy to see that, you know, through the concerns that we are raising, regardless of where the meetings are, the university is doing something about the concerns that we've raised. So the hope is that they do something about this too. And if they don't, then we obviously keep moving forward and figure out the best way to ensure that students are supported.
Thank you. Lionel, please go ahead.
Okay, I'll make a comment because I still want to talk about tuition anyway. And I believe that it is true that international students paying a lot of tuition, saying like we have to pay for tuition to do practicum and stuff like, and the staff at the faculty doesn't even get back to us in time for practicum placements, because I've just heard complaints from my constituents. Well, yeah, that's kind of the service that we are paying for, and I think that's absolutely devastating. It's just insane that we are paying that much money and we don't get the service that we deserve. And like when I do remember like when I raised this kind of concern with like in COSA, like in GFC before, about seeing practicums being unpaid, because actually most of the practicums are unpaid and students have to, like me, okay, we have to work like part-time after the practicum and like to pay for rent, to pay for like everything life related. Life is very hard, honestly. And I said, well, I mean, and then they told us, well, we can't lower tuition for that because you're gonna pay for that 15 credit anyway. I was like, you speak like, what was that person again? You speak like the finance minister, the Canadian finance minister, Christina Freeland, saying that you're gonna cancel your $14 Disney subscription while you earn like what, $300,000 per year. And that's extremely out of touch. And you are just gonna leave me with a comment saying, well, you could always apply for financial support. I don't think actually we would qualify for that, but because why do we need to apply for that if we don't have to pay you that much in the first place? It's just very frustrating. And then like you hear those comments from the people in the ivory tower, it's just crazy. And I hope something is going to change, because I'm very frustrated at this time, like because I kind of promised this and that when I campaigned for my seat. But in the end, well, I mean, I've made my voice, but practicum still has to be paid. I'm very sad about it. So yeah, just make a comment.
Thank you, Lionel. Yes.
This is a very niche specific topic, because we discussed this in the ISA consultation, but thankfully the international students do get some no strings attached funding now after they consolidated the funding sources between domestic and international. So I clarified this with Melissa Padfield and another person whose name I'm forgetting, but international students do qualify in some cases, like the emergency bursary. So yeah, it's very beneficial, but I still fully agree with whatever you said.
Thank you. Not to be overly procedural, but I just want to clarify, a point of order is meant to rectify when a rule has been broken. You can offer a point of information, but that would eat out of someone else's speaking time and they would have to accept. But no worries, it's complex. So next we have Ibukun, please go ahead.
Okay, so after you talked about the campus food bank and the uni supporting that, which I think is absolutely wonderful. However, food banks are supplementary, they're not meant to be long-term solutions. And it's kind of like, what's the idiom? It's like you're putting your finger in the dam instead of rebuilding the dam. Like it's only a, pardon? Great. Something like that. Yeah, it's a momentary solution to like an overarching issue. And like, I'm not trying to say that we have to rectify like, you know, price gouging at the grocery store, but maybe there's something more can be done by the university. Like, how do we continue that advocacy effort is what I would like to see. Because as of the last time I spoke with Aaron, the university is not funding the campus food bank. They're like, you got a space, but that's about it. And more students are relying on it to meet their basic needs. So in short, I think that's a great thing that they're doing. However, I would like to see more effort from the university side, either to better fund the campus food bank or realize that there's a larger systemic issue that's happening for students not to be able to afford groceries.
Thank you. Aryan, please go ahead.
kind of a question related to the same thing. I'd noticed in earlier order papers before I joined that someone had asked about Elev, and can I ask two questions in the same question?
Fortunately not.
Because it's very connected. Okay,
They're like inseparable,
It's like carry on. Like if true, then the second question kind of.
Sure, I'll allow that. Yeah. Just not like two completely.
I'm just operating under the
questions.
Okay. If I operate under the assumption that Elev is located in sub, then I don't need to ask two questions. But I heard that Elev does not get charged rent because it is not for profit. I noticed on their website that they are in fact charging like a small fee. Maybe it's because I've never been into business, but if they're charging a fee, does that imply, considering it might imply that they're actually earning the cash, wouldn't that mean that they're for profit? And if not, instead of not charging them rent, why can't we swap it and charge them rent since they have a fee anyway, and instead charge Campus Food Bank no rent? I can rephrase if needed.
Yeah. So I think I understood it as just like, are they for profit? And if they are for profit, can the arrangement just be that the Campus Food Bank is not charged rent?
Sorry. And what I can say is, I mean, these contracts at any point were negotiated by different people at different points. What I can say is different years, for example, when the Elev contract was negotiated, the executives at that time had priorities that they thought were important. So at this stage, what I can say is that at the end of this year, I believe in April, Elev's contract is going to be expiring, and we're going to be looking exactly at the things that council's been raising when we look at renegotiating what their contract looks like.
Okay, thank you. We have just under 4 minutes. Are there any further questions or comments from members before we proceed? You have had three, so I'm sorry I have to cut you off. Seeing none, we will move out of question period into our next session of business. Actually, it's time for a recess. So I will take attendance and then we will take a break. Abner?
Present.
Gerline?
Present.
Christian?
Present.
Julia?
Present.
Joanie?
Present.
Alex?
Present.
Abdul? Rebecca? Milan? Fateh?
Present.
Levi?
EC?
Pien?
Present.
Jaden?
Present.
Paulina?
Present.
Chanpreet?
Proxy present.
Medina, Adrian,
present.
Lionel,
see.
Ibukun, Aryan,
here.
Gabriella,
here.
Daniela, Charvi,
present.
Simran,
here.
Laurel,
here.
David,
here.
Rana,
present.
Vedant?
Here.
And I am present. Okay, we adjourned for 15 minutes, so be back at 7:55 p.m.
Okay, council. Okay, it is 7:55 p.m., so I'm going to call us back to order. Our next section of the agenda is board and committee business, and the first item is the motion to nominate two members of council to the Health and Dental Plan Committee. Julia, would you like to introduce that?
Hi, everybody. So the Health and Dental Plan Committee, basically, I mentioned earlier in my report, they serve a bunch of important functions, including setting the direction for the structure and delivery of the health and dental plan, providing feedback to Green Shield and Student Care on communications coverage, and basically all components related to the plan. You'll be helping to review and recommend any benefits or premium changes to the plan, so you can make a lot of really big tangible changes as to what is covered by our insurance. And we're looking for two counselors to sit on it, and we meet on a monthly basis based on everybody's availability. So if you're interested or if you have any questions, please nominate yourself. Thank you.
Sorry, before we proceed, can't nominate yourself, can nominate other people. Joanie, please go ahead.
I would like to nominate Levi.
Levi?
I accept.
Levi accepts.
Point of information?
Yes.
What are the committee like meeting schedule?
Yeah, so we meet monthly. Our goal is to meet monthly depending on everybody's schedule. No, since we just confirmed the three student at-larges and we're trying to get two counselors today. After that, then we'll send out a let us meet for everybody.
Gerlene, please go ahead.
I would like to nominate Fateh.
Fateh?
Sorry, I decline.
Fateh declines. Simran?
I'd like to nominate Counselor Ford. Is that your last name? Yeah.
Laurel?
Yeah, I'd like to do it.
Okay. Laurel accepts. There are two open seats and we have two nominations. Are there any further nominations from the floor? David? Yes, I believe there is. Nominate Vedant? Yeah. Vedant?
I respectfully decline.
Okay, Vedant declines. Any further nominations? Julia?
I nominate Simran.
Simran?
I'd like to respectfully decline, but thank you.
Okay, last call, going once, going twice. Gone. So we have two members nominated and two open positions. I'll just confirm that there is no opposition to just appointing Levi and Laurel to the Health and Dental Plan Committee. No opposition? Awesome. Okay, congrats, Levi and Laurel. Our next motion is to nominate one member of council to the sub-planning committee. Julia, would you like to introduce that motion?
Yes. Okay. So the sub-planning committee, we meet every 3 weeks to monthly, basically, and everyone's availability is. And basically, you'll be reviewing student needs, the context of the facilities and services provided by SUB. You also have a large voice in developing the building master plan. You consult with students and other stakeholders regarding items within like our mandate. And for upcoming like renovations, you get to see the blueprints first and give us your feedback on what you want to see for the future of SUB. Let me know if you have any questions.
Thank you. Are there any nominations from the floor for the sub-planning committee? Joanie.
I'd like to nominate Pien.
Pien?
I'll accept.
Keen accepts. I think I saw Simran.
Nominate, okay, I don't know their last name, but Councillor Aryan.
Aryan?
Again, I just need to know the meeting schedule.
Our goal is 3 weeks to monthly, and it depends on everyone's schedule.
I accept.
Aryan accepts. Okay, any further nominations? Okay, going once, going twice. Gone. Okay, so we have two nominees for one position. Okay, so Courtney is going to make a poll. So while Courtney does that, there is a nomination procedure for when it is contested. We haven't used it for some time, so just allow me to refresh myself. Okay, so nominees will be given a 1 minute speaking turn to sell themselves to council in the order that they were nominated. So Peen, you go first, you have 1 minute.
I mean, if you want me to sit on it, vote for me. It doesn't really matter to me.
Thank you for that thrilling speech. Aryan, please go ahead, 1 minute.
I feel like I need to match Bean's energy. I honestly just wanted to rock, paper, scissors someone for the nomination, but like I'm ready to do it. I don't mind, okay? Like if you don't want me to do it, I'm okay with it. If you want me to do it, I'm happy to do it. It's up to you. You can vote either of us.
Okay, thank you for those speeches. So I believe Courtney has the form ready, almost. Yes. Okay, round two, 30-second speeches. Peen, would you like to go ahead?
No, I'm good.
Aryan, 30-second speech, if you'd like.
My name is Aryan Shetty. I am the Open Studies Counselor in the SU. I actually serve under you, so I'm surprised you don't know me. I love doing things. I'm going to be honest, and anything, honestly. Yeah. If you think I'd be a good representative of the student population and would keep their interests in mind when planning the sub-planning committee, when planning things to be installed in sub, such as but not limited to the water wall, I'm more than happy to represent your opinions in the committee. I would probably
okay,
oppose the
sorry
water
to
wall,
cut though. You off. I think that was about 30 seconds. More importantly, the link has been sent via email. It could probably work for this. I haven't tested it out for names yet. So I believe that should have been sent to the council email. So please make sure to log your votes. I know you can't speak against your own motion. I'm not sure if you can't vote against yourself. Did I hear someone hasn't received the form?
Okay. Okay, there are 6 members who have not voted. I'll give it approximately another minute. If you cannot vote for some reason or can't access the form, please let us know. Yes. Thank you for noting that. Okay, I am going to call voting to a close. And with 14 votes of 24, Aryan is appointed to the sub-planning committee. Congratulations. It is at this point dilatory to call for division. So I also think it's by secret ballot in any case, so we can't tell you. So with that, we will move to our next motion. Lionel?
Wait, just a point of information, who won it?
Aryan.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so having considered Milan's request to withdraw 8C, 8D, and 9A, I am going to accept that request and withdraw those motions. So those will be considered withdrawn. So our next motion is the motion to approve first principles of the Indigenous Students Policy. Christian, would you like to introduce that motion?
Evening, Council. I will pass it over to VP Carr to talk about it. She was the spearhead policy lead on this review.
Just one moment. I'm just pulling it up. I'm sorry. So all the changes that you see reflected here are in consultation with the ARC committee and the ISU, and also referring to the Indigenous Student Success Survey and the Canada Census 2021. So I have updated all the information after consulting all these folks and referring to the data that was available. And yeah, feel free to ask any questions if you have.
Thank you. Are there any members wishing to go on the speakers list at this point? Any members wishing to go on the speakers list? Milan, please go ahead.
Thank you so much. I don't really have anything to say. I'll just, it's obviously, except to, I just want to thank our Vice President Academic Grilling Carr for all our work she did in the committee. It's very nicely done, and a lot of great updates on there. So I just want to say thank you for all the work that you have done over the past few months on this policy.
Thanks, Milan.
Okay, last call for debate on this motion, which will direct the policy committee to create a policy based on the first principles that we are approving. Last call. Aryan?
Just a question, because my memory is failing me. Did we modify the references between Indigenous and Aboriginal? Did we consider both? Did we remove anyone?
We changed, we changed Aboriginal to Indigenous.
Okay. That brings us to the end of the speakers list. So we will move on to a vote on this motion. The motion is to approve the first principles of the Indigenous Students Policy. If you are opposed to this motion, please make it known by a show of hands. Seeing none opposed, that motion passes unanimously. Cue. Okay. So on to general orders. Our first motion is the motion to discuss the proposed 2023-2024 budget principles. Julia, would you like to introduce?
Yes. Hello, everyone. So what we have before you is the 2023-2024 budget principles brought to you by Finance Committee. Just as a context for those of you who don't know, the budget principles is intended to serve as an outline of the fiscal priorities of the Students Union starting on May 1st, 2023, ending April 30th, 2024. And it's coming to you today. In accordance to Student Council Standing Orders, Section 13.2, where we need to give it to council no later than February 15th. So that's why it's coming to you folks today. So we made a lot of changes this year around, and this is the first time we actually implemented a robust consultation process. So we had the opinions of all the core managers in the SU. We brought it to Finance Committee multiple times. It was also brought to COFA, and the General Student Body was consulted on these budget principles. Just a couple of things I'd like to note. So number 33 is in reference to the motion regarding financial management that we made at the last council meeting, I think, yeah, where resources will be made to conduct performance audit and a compliance audit in conjunction with the annual financial statements audit. So that's in there, like as promised by Finance Committee. And I wanted your folks' opinion specifically on number 27 and 30. So 27 is the Students' Council budget shall include $10,000 of unallocated funds to use for projects selected by the next Students' Council to sort of give next year's council more resources to be able to do a bunch of more projects and or initiatives and have the $10,000 to do that. And 30th is this is a conversation that was brought up multiple times in the year of council renewal. And Students' Union shall make room for allowances for potential counselor compensation to be passed only in tandem with the comprehensive governance reform and accountability measures. So sort of what bylaw has been doing all year in terms of governance restructuring and council looking a little different next year. So those are those two, so 27 and 30 are really the big ones that we'd love to get your focused opinion on. But if you have any other questions or feedback for any of the principles we have proposed, we are more than happy to receive them. Thanks.
Thank you. Before we proceed into debate, I just want to really stress, once the budget actually comes for approval, our rules say that we can't make major amendments to that budget prepared by Finance Committee. So as we draft principles and get them ready and give Finance Committee feedback, this is the time to really give that committee direction. So we're not making changes like really late in the game. And so we can give them proper instruction for the drafting of budget. So important debate today. Thank you, Finance, for bringing it forward. Ibukun, please go ahead.
I'm just wondering if you could specify for point 27, what type of projects you mean? Is that within the council or for students at large?
Yeah, great question. So the intended purpose of the $10,000 is for student council projects. So a lot of things like this year, CAC brought up multiple times and how sort of like the $5,000 budget that they have is a little tight in terms of getting Kairos blanket exercises, sort of elder compensation, and also things like your counselor like sweaters. So it's sort of like intended to help support any initiatives that you folks may have in mind. So that can be the social media. Last year we had a bunch of different projects put forward by counselors. So this would be sort of like a way to directly support you folks in doing that.
Thank you. Jaden, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I notice on point number 29 there for increased funding towards the student groups, and I really like that there is more of an emphasis on it. However, given that we do have now over 500 student groups on campus, many of which, and I've actually gotten personal testimonies to, don't even bother applying to SU for funding, given the large amount of work from a student group perspective, given the rather lower potential reward through funding, could we get some numbers on what that might be?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Jaden. So that's something that I know that I mentioned during elections last year, something that we've been talking about. What we are trying to focus on, and we've asked for information that we've gathered from student group services, is around what the numbers look like, what the applications look like, how much money is being dispersed. So our team is kind of going through the process of looking at that in tandem with this. So we don't have any number right now, but it's definitely something that we can look at getting once we have more time to have a conversation around what it currently looks like and what we would hope to see it be like.
Yeah, just to add on to that. So like Abner said, we're still currently like doing research, and we're also currently in the process of like talking to the dean of students as to sort of changing how the university and the SU does stuff related to student groups. So especially like student group event approval is something that DAW specifically handles alone. We don't have anything to do with that. Whereas registration and other things like granting is covered under the SU. So we're currently trying to like figure out what the balance would be and how to better support student groups, whether that may be currently reforming and like how to grant, like how we adjudicate grants, increasing the amount of grants that people can apply for, or the total pool of grants. So we're still exploring all of our options, but given the deadlines of where budget principles had to be given to council, I want to make sure that something was in there. And then when the operating budget comes forward, we'll have like a paragraph for each of the budget principles explaining how this is reflected in the numbers in the budget that we give you. Hopefully that helps.
Thank you. Levi, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Now, with the exception of the lack of a Corgi Day budget principle, which I am extremely upset about, I will admit, I think this is what we have here is the product of probably the most consultation I've seen in that has gone into budget principles in any year I've been on council. Some of the line items that we have here to me make total sense, especially 33, the one that devotes funding to perform the performance audit, the compliance audit, second only to the GRTF recommendations. These two items were essentially my biggest reason for being here. It was something I campaigned on when I ran last year unsuccessfully. It was something I campaigned on again this year successfully. So I'm absolutely thrilled that even though it was a little too late to do for this year, that we're at least setting the money aside to have this done for next year finally. There's numerous issues that are prevalent with the organization. I think that having both of these audits in addition to the financial statement audit that we're supposed to have anyway, once we shine the spotlight on it, then we can start working on fixing them. The safety and security of sub, we've noticed a spike in that lately, especially with the new security measures that we've had to implement. The CAC budget or the unallocated funds for use of projects like by Students Council, that was also something that we struggled to get in the previous time I was on council, because with the size of CAC's budget, it's almost entirely exhausted by the volunteer appreciation. So when most of that funding goes to the subsidized jackets, there's for other things that we want to use to get our names up there. Like, can we get business cards? Well, there's no money for it. Can we get name tags or lapel pins? No, there's no money for it. So if we don't even have money for these tiny little knickknacks, how are we supposed to get any big projects going if we like the Kairos blanket exercise or tabling at InfoMart for the new international students in August and September? Most of the other small edits and changes, just paring out things that don't make sense anymore. But overall, I'm pretty pleased with all the work that's gone into this, both by all the staff and by all the council and committee members involved.
Thank you. Adrian, please go ahead.
Yeah, one comment and one question. First of all, thank you for bringing this council. Super excited about this. This looks fantastic. My comment is just echoing what Levi said. As the CAC chair for this year, who's been trying to find money and having to ask 27 different people to see if we can get money for an activity, I'm very happy to see the $10,000 coming in. And once that money is under council's purview, that makes it really easy for us to delegate some money to CAC, some money to ARC, and we can get that sort of stuff figured out much more easily than having to wade through a lot of ambiguity, which is kind of what our current system was. So very excited about that. My question is on principle 35. The Students' Union shall allocate resources to exploring ways to expand mental health services available to students. So I'm curious what exactly we want this to look like. And the reason I bring it up, obviously, expanding access to mental health services has been an advocacy priority of the SU for years, as it rightfully should be, and it's something that still is in need of drastic improvement. My main worry, and the reason I bring up the question, is by the SU taking on an increased burden for supplying mental health services to students, I wonder if we kind of let the university off the hook in a lot of ways. It's something I've noticed in SRAs and in other groups with delegated authority. Once you start providing a service to students, the university kind of can assume, or the faculty in my case, can assume that it's dealt with and move on in a lot of ways. Obviously, I know that the advocacy efforts would be there, but I'm just curious about like specific initiatives that this money might end up going to. And I know we'll see that in the full budget, but the thought behind what specific initiatives we could see this going to avoid that kind of offloading of responsibility from the university.
Yes, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for bringing it up, Adrian. And you do bring up a good point. I just want to give sort of a little context as to why this was even included in the first place, because it is a new budget principle. So like I mentioned earlier, we did consultation with the general student body. And the number two sort of biggest things the students wanted to see reflected in the budget principles was things to do with affordability and mental health. And like Abner mentioned earlier, the university is currently investing, I think it was $1.6 million into sort of CCS and all of our mental health initiatives. And this is sort of the reasoning behind on our end of the budget principles is to expand on the mental health services that we currently provide to students. So we don't do sort of like professional counseling that the university provides, but we do have the peer support center. And we wanted to an example of how we can use this budget principle is to give them more resources they need to help, let's say, example, volunteer recruitment, because that is something that they're having a difficult time with this year and had to reduce their hours. Another thing is also expanding UASU Cares further. It's one of the things that I'm doing this year, but I want to expand it even more. So we're having talks and collaboration with the university to be able to also expand on their end of things and try to mimic a wellness directory similar to ours. And those are just some examples that we have in terms of increasing our mental health services. But you do bring up a good point of not wanting the university sort of give us the responsibility of doing that. But I think we cover a different sort of aspect of mental health on our side of things. Hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, that's perfect. Thanks, Julia.
Okay, thank you. David, please go ahead.
Yes, just a quick question about point 26. The Students' Union shall allocate 20% of the SFC Green Fund to Indigenous-led and focused projects. I was curious just because this is one of the few points that includes a specific number. So I just wanted to know how this 20% was determined, and that's all of it. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, David. So just to give a little more context on what the Green Fund is, hopefully you folks know, but the Green Fund is basically the portion of the Sustainability Capital Fund fee that you all of you folks pay. And it's specifically So for like SCFC, we adjudicate green fund applications to support student-led sustainability projects on campus up to $10,000. And currently, even with our current like application process, we put a lot of emphasis on sort of indigenous-led projects, and we're seeing sort of like an absence in that, in like the number of people applying. We're in this lot of like indigenous-led projects on campus, and we hopefully like through this like 20% of like allocation, we can encourage more indigenous students to apply. And I think that answers the question, but yeah.
Aryan, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Finance Committee. It's a very good principles have been laid out here. I wanted to make a remark on, like, I mean, I kind of wanted to reinforce the points that Adrian had raised. It's important that the university does, like, we don't operate under the assumption that, like, you know, that we're solely funding all of these resources, solely funding all of these services. We need the university also to have, at least that's what I feel, is that the university needs to have a fair share, a fair part also in this, so that the students' union is not using too much funding or all of their funding on exclusively services, and they're also allowed to do, you know, negotiate where the money goes rather than solely fund all of these services. I was glad to hear that the university is also funding CCS. Because even last year as an RA, we could not divert many students because of them being overbooked. And so there are those services that we have available, but they're very overbooked, overworked, and underpaid or they suffer from a lack of resources. So it's very important that funding goes there as well, whether it be from the university, from the SU, or both. I did also want to ask about sub. I saw that 32.32 resources will be made available to improve the safety and security of sub. I just feel like there shouldn't be an emphasis on sub. It should be like an overarching responsibility for the university as a whole, just because even though it's not within our purview, residence buildings, for example, aside from other campus buildings, a lot of these places have incidents. There's an incident log on the UAPS website, which shows like a daily breakdown of trespassing, damage, whatever. And so like there's a lot of issues. I agree sub has a lot of issues, and you know, the SU does have an emphasis to like focus on sub. I'm just hoping it doesn't neglect the fact that we have a lot of incidences on other areas of campus.
Was there a question?
I'm open to comment on anything. I'd like to hear anything that has to be said.
Sure. Okay.
Wait.
Ibrahim, please go ahead.
Okay. So I feel like a couple of these points are vague, and that might be intentional, just so we can kind of adjust as needed. For example, 23, with kind of just like prioritizing EDI, it just feels a little bit unclear to me. Same with 14. I'm not sure who is deemed as an important stakeholder. So I think perhaps some clarity there could be good, but once again, that might be intentional, just so there's a little bit more brevity in the development of the budget. So another point I wanted to bring up was point 29. Though additional funding for student groups could be good, I think it'd be more beneficial to subsidize student rental spaces on campus. Because like, for example, my student group got a grant this year, and we're grateful for that, but the majority of that grant money is going towards renting out a space on campus, which it sort of feels, I don't know, like a little bit forced in a way, especially because we want to call sub like the student's living room, but we can't afford to host events in our own living room. It feels a little bit insincere to call it that then. So I would love to see subsidized rental costs for student groups.
Thank you. Julia, please go ahead.
Yeah, so thanks so much, Aryan and Buku, for your comments. I do just want to clarify one thing, Aryan. So sort of I get sort of like the
explanation that you and Adrian were sort of mentioning regarding the mental health resources. But I do just want to clarify that our services and university services are completely separate from one another. So we only control and fund peer support center, and they don't have any stake in that because we run it internally in the organization. And in terms of like CCS, the only thing we can do with that is to advocate for them to get more funding, but it's 100% controlled by the university. And sort of same to your point as the safety sources in regards to like sub, I think that like it's really important to highlight all the incidences happening and safety concerns all around campus, and that's certainly something that we've been like advocating on as a executive. But in regards to the budget principles, the reason why there is an emphasis on sub is because we can only control sub, so we can put money towards installing, let's say, more sort of like budget badge access to multiple doors instead of like the three that we currently have right now. So that would be an example of what we would use that money for to increase the safety of sub. So yeah, I just want to clarify that, but your points are well taken. And Ibuku, in terms of the 13 and 14, so 13 was actually a budget principle like that was implemented last year by my predecessor and all of the budget principles are made to be vague because we're sort of like have to be creative and figure out specifically where in the budget we want those things to be like reflected. Like I mentioned, in the budget, when the operating budget comes forward, we'll have a paragraph for like each thing and how that is reflected. And you folks make the decision whether or not we follow the budget principles that you folks approved. And in terms of important stakeholders, funny story, actually, we had a list of all the important stakeholders that we had on there, but we removed it because it was a list of like 13 different groups, and it just keeps getting added more and more every year. We sort of didn't want to limit into like for like the 13 groups that were listed. Let's say like another important stakeholder comes up, but they're not in the budget principles. It's just sort of like it puts us in the box. And that's why we have it on there. And I really thank you for the student rental spaces comment that you had. That's well taken. It will take that back to make improvements. Thanks.
Thank you. Lionel, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just have a few comments, like as others have made a point, because I feel like generally this is looking okay, but I just have some concerns that I wish to see is that, where's my notes? Oh no, sorry, I lost it. Okay, it's here. So like I wish to see that if the SU could make some annual donations support the campus food bank and to extend the SU awards to more students, because I went by like the list when they published it, it's actually quite few. And I would imagine like it'd be better to help the students if we could increase like to expand our award base to award more students for their achievements. And also safety, yes, is very important. One last thing is that like for the major events and for the like the decorations we have in sub, like I think this should be carefully evaluated before they are put into place to avoid fiascos like the BTR and also like the 15K waterfall, which people have been questioning. So, I mean, it's a good thing to put it there, but like there are people that's gonna question that it's like 15K waterfall just in the middle of the sub, right? Because, you know, I kind of like it, but some people don't. So, yeah, so I just want to emphasize that sort of that level of scrutiny and fiscal responsibility there. So thank you.
Thank you. Daniela, please go ahead.
Regarding the security line, with increasing security and safety, I understand the need for that. But if it's going to be like also an increased security in terms of like having people provide that type of security, whether that's like with a different company or like, I don't know how that's going to go about it. Is there going to be conversations about ensuring that these individuals who are providing sub security are also trained on how to like address bias in particular towards Indigenous students? Because every single year these students are constantly being asked to leave either campus or sub just because of the way they look. And even when I got a chance to speak with Bill, when I brought this up, he has never heard this from the SU as being an issue. So I just want to make sure that while security is being increased, we're also addressing the fact that security are not always friendly to a lot of marginalized students, especially Indigenous students. So is this gonna be kept in mind just given that it's hasn't really been brought as an issue to the university yet? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your question. So like I mentioned earlier, we want to improve on what we're currently doing right now. So that's increasing access to students, sort of expanding the number of doors where students can access through their one card. And in terms of like sort of safety and security, we'd still be following what the policies are written as to how the Students' Union wants to approach safety and security on campus. And it's what's written by Students' Council, and that's what we have to sort of abide by when it comes to our practices, both externally and internally. So your comments are more like are 100% taken positively, but we will be like sort of following what council is guiding us to do when it comes to policing. Hopefully that answers your question.
Thank you. Levi, please go ahead.
Initially, I was going to reply to the important stakeholders question, but Julie beat me to it. Thank you very much. But I guess in regards to the security question too, there's a lot that we can implement before we get to the active security, whether that be peace officers or guards or whatever the case may be, who may possess that bias against certain demographics. There's a lot of passive security measures we can do, whether that be the technology aspect through the one card access or cameras, crime prevention through environmental design, which would be a great conversation to be had at sub planning group the next time they meet. That would definitely not be a short-term solution, but when working into our building renovation plans, when we're redesigning the new living room space and the plaza or the patio or whatever it was called that I can't remember now. But it's almost like the mechanism of mitigating or eliminating risk, of which I'm also, the name escapes me, but doing everything you can before putting feet and eyes on the ground, essentially. So that's, but again, that's definitely probably a much further out than just something that's going to be looked at next year. So if we do need to have people, at least in the short term, it may or may not be unavoidable, but hopefully we can reduce the reliance on the human error factor.
Thank you. Aryan, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to raise comments on points 29 and 32. 29, the Students' Union shall allocate additional funding to further support student groups. Like Jaden stated, there definitely needs to be a bit more, there needs to be more ease to access that funding. Just like, I get that it's not necessarily totally your department, it's the Dean of Students and everything, but there has to be that communication, because yes, it is the Dean of Students, but at the same time, if you're giving funds to it, I feel like you should have a say in that matter, in the aspect that our groups are telling us, like our constituents are telling us that the funding is hard to access and we need to make the access to it easier. When I was in the focus group for the SEAP, I heard the same thing from a different student where they said that they couldn't bother with funding, but they couldn't bother seeking funding because it was really inaccessible, because it was a lengthy process. In terms of point 32, resources will be made available to improve the safety and security of sub, just like Daniela and Levi have raised, is definitely, I think active patrol should be the last thing. Passive patrol should be a bit more prioritized. Passive survey should be prioritized in the essence of cameras. Because like one thing I've noticed all around campus is that it's very hard to find cameras in buildings, like especially cab, but things get stolen a lot, like really often. There's like practically no cameras. And so like I'd have friends just standing by things if I wanted to leave things aside. And also in terms of UAS profiling, that's another point I noticed. Back when I was in RA, we had a complaint that UAPs were like in front of students' faces, they were just insulting them just because like some students might be like, you know, where some students have a negative impact on the image of students, it seems to impact UAPS's entire image of students. And so that can play into their like perception of all students, or it could play into like profiling of indigenous students, which we do need to avoid. So there needs to be some sort of accountability on whatever security options we use. A suggestion could be like how the hospitals have like those, they have the police set up in one place and only if they're needed, they kind of move around, something like that. So they have security, but they have peace officers, and then only when the peace officers are called, they come. The sub building is right next to Ed building where UAPS is stationed. So I don't see why the response times are also pretty high, at least from my own personal experience.
Thank you. Julia, please go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, thank you everybody for your comments. Hopefully, I don't know if you have if anyone has any more, but I think I'm the last person to speak on this. But if you do have any other comments, please feel free to message me. Because this will be taken, it has to be approved by council no later than March 15th. But I want to just mention a couple of things in terms of like Lionel's comments. Yeah, thank you so much for everything that you said. We'll definitely also take that back, especially the extending SU awards to more students. And what you mentioned about sort of like decorations and sub, that's also like well taken. That's why when it comes to sort of like budget principles and creating the budget, that's why it's being taken to council for approval before we can do anything about it. In terms of like the waterfall, that was also taken to council. We want to make sure that you folks are like leading this organization as you are the top of the organization. I just want to also second everything Levi mentioned. There's a lot of like ways that we can sort of improve the safety of SEB without sort of like resulting in sort of like maybe UAPS or whatever they may be. Like I said, we'll still be taking the direction of policy committee whenever they finish the campus and security policy that was up, taken back this year by council's wish to do so. So we're still sort of like waiting on that as well to see how you folks want us to lead in our security and safety, not only in policy and external sort of advocacy, but also our internal practices as well. But that's a great sort of example was like putting up cameras and stuff. We just, we've started to put some across around the building and it costs money to do that. So that's sort of like one of the reasons why I think it was number 32 is on there. So it's just exploring a bunch of different ways on doing that. But thank you so much once again, everybody, for all your comments. If you have anything else that you'd like to add or like to bring up, please don't hesitate to email me. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. That brings us to the end of the speakers list and out of that motion. Our next motion is to discuss the potential action in response to the Minister of Advanced Education's demands to strengthen free speech on campus. Milan, would you like to introduce?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So like I said in my intro earlier today, that as everybody knows, last week there was the as everybody knows, there is a controversy at the University of Lethbridge when Professor Francis Wilson, who is a former professor at Mount Royal University, since fired after comments she made regarding residential schools and BL Black Lives Matter, was invited to do a speech, which the University of Lethbridge, although they initially declined to cancel it, they eventually did cancel it due to many of those comments that she made, unfortunately, denying the harms of residential schools and also negative comments against, you know, Black and Indigenous people as well, which several students, four students at Mount Royal talked about. And in response to that, the Minister of Education wrote a statement saying that condemning the cancellation of the speech rather than condemning the professor and saying that she was going to take action to include to strengthen free speech on campus. And just on Friday, this past Friday, he put out a release saying that he's requiring universities to submit reports on free speech. And given the timing of all this, as you know, he's always talked about free speech. I think given the timing of this, where he said this in response to him, something being canceled that, you know, I, in my opinion, was would have been overtly, you know, racist and caused a lot of harm to, you know, so many people. I think it's the reason why I wanted to bring this up to you, see if there's any action we want to take or on what the minister said, so that way we can ensure that any free speech, does not include like any, you know, does not include hate speech or any speech that's meant to, you know, incite violence or trauma against some people who are essentially are marginalized on the campus.
Hey, thank you for that introduction. Are there any members wishing to speak to this motion? Abner? Yes? Lionel is seconded. Yeah. Okay. Ibukun, please go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Milan, for bringing this up. There's a lot of really terrible things that happen in the world, and it's no good, no fun. Okay, 2 points. As a visible minority, obviously it's like, oh my gosh, oh, so terrible, people will hate you because of your race. Oh, not a fun time. But I would venture to say that conversations about such are contentious for multiple reasons. And being that like this space is very much all eyes on us, I would say maybe this conversation is better had in a more like a private setting, and then we come back with action items as opposed to having a conversation here and then creating action items, if that makes sense. But I mean, I'm proud to say that's messed up. I personally condemn racism. It's not to my personal benefit. Sorry. But yeah, I would just say maybe try this again, smaller setting, smaller groups, and we'll come back with action items.
Thank you. Lionel, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I actually very much appreciate Milan for bringing this up and asked me to second it. And when he reached out to ask, I immediately agreed so, because I think this is something that, I mean, regardless like in what kind of circumstance that should be talked about here, because it actually has a lot to do with students and especially students that are people of color, that they might be under attack under this sort of pseudo freedom of speech, because it was never actually about freedom of speech, because they're just saying, oh, it's freedom of speech is under attack because like, we're doing something that they don't like. The funny thing is, actually, back in 2018, I actually shared on my Instagram story a few days ago. Back in 2018, the University of Alberta gave David Suzuki, I believe that was his name, Suzuki, right? That was named in 2018, an honorary degree. You know what? Do you know how the Danielle Smith, the current premier, she reacted saying on Twitter that. That like this is an outrage or something. Okay, now you are saying, okay, now the students at Lethbridge are blocking in like an anti-Indigenous speech, and now you are saying, oh, we are blocking your freedom of speech. I think that's just the top hypocrisy, and it's basically just one roof for me, one roof for the EU. We cannot like let this to stand, because it's just ridiculous as it sounds, like their ideology anyway. And the other point is, because Milan actually withdrew like one of the motion. Actually, they were talking about that our students, like former counselors, current counselors that signed that letter was under threat. And I actually saw that Twitter feed myself as well. And I was like, this should have no place under a democracy. As I believe that's such an assault. It's an assault to democracy, in the sense that like if some people don't agree with you, and then you're threatening to say, I'm coming back to your door, I'm gonna threat you. That's not how things work in democracy. That's a dictatorship. And if that's what they are asking for, we must go full out against that, because yeah, we cannot let that sort of thing to go around in a free country like this. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Abner, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Milan, thank you for giving us the chance to talk about this. I just want to share from the SU's perspective, at least the executive committee's perspective, what steps we have taken so far since the announcement was made on Friday. I don't know if any of you had a chance to see it, but the Students' Union released a statement reaffirming our commitment to truth and reconciliation and the TRC calls to action. You can see that it was released on February 3rd. You can see that on the SU news site. On that same Friday, when the announcement was made about the report cards, we also did a few media interviews. I just want to share with you at least our views on this. Because I know that was one of the things that was initially talked about here. From our perspective, back in 2019, when the minister first decided that free speech was something that they wanted to discuss, they put a requirement in place. Institutions had to develop a freedom of expression statement, which was done. And now this is just an additional thing that has been added to, for what reason, I am not sure. We see it as being additional red tape. But the real concern for us that we've tried to stress through our interviews as well is the fact that this is really just taking away from the issues that are really mostly affecting students, and students are expressing to us every single day around rising tuition, around mental health concerns and the need to be able to access professional support, around sexual and gender-based violence prevention and response, around rising cost of living. So we are urging the minister to reconsider and realign their priorities in order to address the things that student leaders have been raising for the last 8 months, if not longer, for years, which we're not seeing at all reflected through these asks or what's being responded through from the ministry.
Okay, thank you. Lionel, please go ahead.
Yeah, I just wish to make like a final comment, pretty sure that I do agree with Abner that definitely this government has to deal with more urgent issues that students care more about, tuition, mental health, affordability, things like that. Yeah, and I also do agree that it is essentially like another like additional red tape, because it's funny enough that this government has actually have a minister of red tape reduction. Now it's actually adding more red tape, which is hypocritical. I mean, and also like installing such like say free pseudo freedom of speech, the notion is really just, I mean, like I've said, like it's attacking democracy, but also on a university level, it could be dangerous to our academic freedom. That like, hey, like if the government, like if the government thinks like our curriculum, our like some professors teach something in the class that doesn't fit their value, they're gonna ban it. And then where do we stand as an institution? I think that's also a very fundamental question, that what we stand as a university is that we have this academic freedom here, that it should not be meddled by the government. The government should not get involved in this, because every time the government get involved in this, shit happens. And yeah, we don't want to happen, like, I don't want to see it happen again. So that's my comment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any final debate on this motion? Okay, seeing none, that motion is concluded. We have one further motion in closed session, but to discuss it, we would need to extend. Levi? I spoke with Jaden. I think the suggestion was just a motion to extend until the conclusion.
Let's do that then.
Okay. Second, Aryan? Okay. So the motion is to extend to the conclusion of the presentation on the Alpha Psi investigation. I think we can move straight into a vote on this one. It will require a two-thirds majority. If you are opposed to extending, please make it known by a show of hands. Did see one objection, so that motion passes and we are extended. I've had a request from Chen Preet to retake his seat. Since we are switching to a new motion, I will allow that. I'm sure Mikhail may want to go home. It is late. Yeah. Okay. If you're okay with that, I'll allow Chen Preet to retake his seat. Oh, Jaden? Yes, we're not in closed quite yet, just so you know. So Chen Preet will retake his seat. Okay.
Thank you, Mikhail.
Mr. Speaker, point of information, if I may, please.
Yes.
Can Mikhail stay in the meeting room? I remember when Hafiz was my proxy, both of us were able to stay in an in-camera session because we both signed an MND. So if you don't want to go home, he could still stay and be a part of the discussion.
I am going to say not, because he's no longer acting in his capacity as a proxy.
Okay.
Are you a member of student group committee? I think in that case, then yeah, that's okay. Yeah. Okay, so we will go into closed session. We will require a majority vote to move into closed session. I'll just consider the motion on the table. I'll vote to that effect. If you are opposed to moving into closed session, please make it known by a show of hands. Seeing no opposition, we are moved into closed session. Guests of council, if you could please exit the chambers. I think I'm also going to ask you to leave, Mateen.